For RightsCast recaps, discounts on editing services, and educational content delivered to your inbox once a month, you can subscribe to the R.R. Campbell Writes newsletter over at rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter. Again, that's rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter. Thanks for listening. So you've got a book coming out. First of all, congratulations. Second of all, what now? In this episode, we'll take a look at what writers can and should do to promote their work prior to their book's release date, with a special focus on the final 30 days leading up to the book launch. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 31 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell WritesCast. Regular listeners to the show will already be familiar with this episode's guest, Valerie Beal, who joined us back in episode 12 to talk about promoting our work through traditional media. For those listeners who aren't familiar with Valerie and her work, Valerie is a public relations professional, as well as the author of the award-winning Circle of Nine series. She holds a degree in journalism and political science from the University of Wisconsin and has spent more than 25 years working in the public relations field. She edits manuscripts, develops marketing materials, and implements publicity plans for other authors via her agency, Lost Lake Press. She often teaches about writing topics at conferences, libraries, and schools, and she creates a monthly Writers Forum column with the latest news from the publishing industry and writing world. And with a background like that, Valerie certainly has plenty of insight to offer on this topic, so let's dive right in with her episode. Stay tuned after the interview for an update on the next episode of the show. Thanks for listening. Well, thank you, Valerie, for joining me again on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we have another exciting topic this time. We're talking about preparing for a book launch, and more specifically, what we should be working on in the final 30 days leading up to that book launch. So perhaps before we talk about those 30 days specifically, let's try and keep in mind what we should have accomplished before those final 30 days arrive. What are some things that we should have in place before we start working on this last push promotional plan?
I'm happy to talk about that. I'm going to back up just a little bit and talk about why the 30-day time frame. I have to admit that the 30 days is somewhat arbitrary. It could certainly be a 60-day program, but the 30 days is the most compact schedule that's feasible without driving you insane and still giving you some good results. I use this time frame for my book launches, and obviously I have survived and I had some good success with that. So that's why I've chosen the 30-day time frame. Most of us have day jobs, so it's important to keep our lives, our rest of our lives in perspective, I guess. So, but let me tell you, back to your question, the things that you ought to have already done, I would expect that you have your social media in place, that you've long ago created your website or your blog, and you have a presence on Facebook and other social media sites. You may be comfortable with more, or you may be comfortable with less, but at a minimum, you need to have some sort of online presence that gives your biographical information, information on your book, and allows readers to interact with you and you with them. And that you have built a following on the platforms you've chosen. That's page likes on Facebook, followers on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribers to your newsletter and blog. I know that a lot of people are comfortable with just interacting on one social media platform. I always suggest that whatever you decide to do, you do it well. So if you can only manage one social media platform, then so be it. I totally understand the time constraints. The other things you need to have in place, your book has to be ready. That may seem like a no-brainer, but you should have your book completely ready to go. You should have your physical copies ordered in MOBI, that's the Amazon format, and EPUB format. Your book release date should be chosen. You should know that. And you should have your pre-release or your pre-ordering system set up, so that people can place an order once you're doing all these fun launch activities, they have a place to land when they decide to order your book. As we move through the different components of this launch plan, I'll talk about some other activities that fall into things that you should do in advance, but not to overload everybody at the beginning, these are the main things I'd like to talk about right now. So.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. So let's say we're in a position as authors, we've got this foundation established through social media, whichever outlets work best for us. Broadly speaking, then, what should our promotional plan include here in these final 30 days? What should that look like from a bird's eye view?
So media outreach, paid advertising, if you choose. We'll talk about the choices there. Social media marketing, direct or in-person marketing, getting reviews, and also contests that promote engagement on your social media platforms.
Well, let's transition right away then into traditional media. This is something we actually talked about a fair amount in episode 12 of the show for listeners who may be tuning into this episode for their first experience with the RightsCast. So we'll touch on traditional media briefly, but what traditional media should writers consider reaching out to as part of this promotional plan?
Well, I think what's obvious to most of us immediately would be newspapers and magazines. Those always seem the most accessible. But I'm telling you not to discount the idea of actually getting onto radio and TV. There are plenty of local radio programs that feature authors, and there are many morning TV shows, for instance, that would also like to feature writers. You don't have anything to lose by asking those media outlets, to run a story featuring your book or your book release. So I always encourage writers to try that as well. Now, you mentioned episode 12. We did an entire podcast all about traditional media outreach. So I'm not going to get into depth with that because it's going to be much easier for people to refer back to that one when they're ready to go with this component. But briefly, you'll want to create a list of the media you'll be reaching out to. And this is one of those things that should be done before you hit the 30-day point. You're going to want to have that list of media outlets that you're targeting. And you'll want to also have the components of your media kit ready. A media kit has these things in it: a press release, a digital author photo, a digital book cover photo, a book information sheet, a biography that you should have written in third person, and an endorsement or review sheet if you have one. You also are going to be including a way for the targeted media person, reporter, producer, to get a copy of your book. So if you're offering a download, or maybe you're actually sending them a physical copy of your book at that point. So those are the components, and they are described in detail, as you remember back in that episode. So if any of those terms sound confusing to you, they're described in detail on how to create your own press release and all of those things, like maybe your book information sheet is foreign to you. It's just something you've never heard of. We walk you through all of that in episode 12.
Yeah, and I certainly do recommend that listeners check that one out because, like you said, we get pretty in-depth. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that episode was about 42 minutes. So there's a lot to learn there and a lot to master, but it's really exciting stuff because, as you've mentioned, don't, balk at opportunities to perhaps be on the radio or local television if that's something that would be effective for promoting your book.
Well, and I think it's important to talk about traditional media, is to talk about the hook. You mostly will be addressing the media with the news that your book is coming out. I mean, it's, after all, a book release. But to be particularly relevant beyond that, you'll have to do some research to see how you can further hook the news media into covering your launch. For instance, did you get a stellar endorsement from someone famous or someone well-known in the community? Does your book fit into a particular subject area that's relevant in the news right now? Does it feature local places? Or are you particularly well-known in your community for something other than being a writer? So besides your book launch being the big news, you never are going to go wrong with having an additional hook that makes you an interesting guest to have on a show or to be interviewed for a news piece in a newspaper or a magazine.
Yeah, very good. Let's transition a little bit away from traditional media then and hop into one of those, that next category that you mentioned a little earlier, which is paid advertising. So what should we keep in mind as we make our ad placement selections, and where should writers consider advertising and why?
I'm going to start with the why. Well, the why, of course, is to sell more books, right?
Certainly. That's always helpful.
It is helpful. It's our goal, isn't it? So, and it's an increasingly busy world where social media posts just don't go as far. They don't reach everyone anymore. And you can run a successful launch. You really can without paid advertising. But if you have it in your budget and you are interested in promoting that way, these are the things you should consider. Be careful where you're spending your dollars. I always warn people of that. Make sure that you target readers in your genre. Ads on broad-based websites or in general magazines and newspapers will rarely give you a satisfactory ROI. That's return on investment. Research the best reader websites for the type of book you've written and review their ad packages. if they're legitimate, they'll be upfront on their viewership numbers. And often these sites, besides having the ability to say buy a banner ad or an ad on the side of the page or a daily ad, they also have newsletters that go out to their subscribers that give the launch information and special deals and things like that based on a fee that you would pay that's, you know, prorated to that group of subscribers. For instance, they might have a list of 17,000 people interested in romance novels, 25,000 people interested in mystery. So you will pay based on the amount of people in that subscriber list. Those are usually quite effective, and there's a lot of very legitimate lists that way. If they're sketchy about how many people they have on their list, stay away. They're not, they're being vague for a reason. The other thing that a lot of people are having success with are the specific ads on other platforms, like Facebook ads, Amazon ads, and even now BookBub ads. If you're familiar with BookBub, you know, the wonderful thing to try to get is a BookBub deal of the day. But there's also the chance, I mean, those are elusive, it's very hard to get those. So there's also the chance to advertise via BookBub. And the way that you advertise there is very similar to the way that you advertise on Facebook with your pay-per-click kind of thing. Now, this gets really complicated, and we probably could do another podcast entirely on just how to manage your way and learn your way through running Facebook ads, Amazon ads, and BookBub ads. It's complicated, especially if you've never done this sort of thing before. But those are a possibility and might have a pretty good return on investment. But you're going to have to spend some time learning it in advance. There's no way in this 30-day window that you're going to be able to absorb that information and test out messaging or anything like that. But there's definitely success happening for authors with those types of ads. And also remember, for pre-launch advertising, you are sending people over to an advanced sales page for pre-ordering your book. That's where they're going to land.
And is that advanced sales page, is that something that, for example, you personally would set up through your website, or can you have it redirect to Amazon directly for folks to who might be interested in getting in on that pre-sale right away?
The majority of the time I see people, particularly in indie published authors, using the Amazon pre-sales page. You can certainly work with draft to digital. I think Smashwords allows it too for pre-sales. And this is, we're talking about ebooks here. I know that you can also do the paperback sales over on Amazon pre-sales that way as well. I'm not as well versed whether you can do that over on Barnes & Noble and how to set that up there, but I know that if you're using the Amazon page, you can. You can also, if you are savvy enough on your own website, do that as well, but you have to have it being fulfilled through someone, so it's much easier to go through the Amazon setup, because you don't need to worry about fulfilling those orders on a timely basis.
That seems really like the smart way to go, trying to get folks directly interacting with the interface where they can make the pre-sale. But I will say this, if you do get yourself involved in paid advertising, and I'm speaking with that royal you for the listeners here, one thing that you might consider looking into if you want to direct traffic to your personal website or your author page is look at incorporating what's called a Facebook pixel. And Valerie, I don't know if that's something that you have any experience with at all.
No, I've heard of it, but I've never done it.
Yeah, so the way that it works, this was introduced to me recently, but basically you embed within your site's HTML, you embed within it some code that you get generated from Facebook through your Facebook account. And what happens then is you can use Facebook's tracking tools to see who's coming to your website really in depth. Because of course, if you're always logged into Facebook in the background, this is the age we live in, they're always tracking what you do because they want to see what you're interested in to advertise to you personally. And of course, that's always of benefit to, guess who? Advertisers. But if you are an advertiser in this case, as a writer, it might be really useful for you to know, for example, who's visiting your website in particular detail. You can get a little bit more specificity where, you know, location on earth is concerned. You can learn about, hey, that's weird. I have a bunch of people who happen to be dog owners that are visiting my site. They must have liked the dog that I wrote into a recent novel or something like that. It can just give you interesting ideas for different advertising angles to work when you're out there doing that marketing. So again, I'm no expert on it, but I was able to put the pieces together between a conversation with someone else and looking at some blogs out there. So if you are going to direct traffic to your site, it's something I recommend listeners consider checking out.
Oh, I think that's incredibly smart advice. You know, Google Analytics can only take you so far. And of course, we, you know, understand how much we call it data mining goes on with Facebook behavior. And you'll use that to your advantage, of course, when you're trying to target audiences with Facebook ads. But this way, you're using it, you know, just in another way to make sure that you know the most about the people visiting your site. Smart, really, really smart. Now I need to do that. Now I've got one more thing to add to my list. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
There you go. There you go. One more thing to toss into this list of things to do in those arbitrary 30 days. But of course, we've talked about now traditional media. We've talked about paid advertising. But a really big one, I think, for a lot of people, it would be to probably focus on social media. Because aside from the time that you invest there, if you have the account set up, it's probably free to get engaged with the community and promote your book. So what strategies would you recommend we put to use across those social media platforms, aside from simply letting people know that our book is coming out? And how can we custom tailor our approach for the individual social networks?
Well, as I mentioned in the beginning, you'll have your preferred social media in place already before the 30-day point, and you should be familiar with the best practices for each platform and have built as large of a following as possible on those platforms. You'll need to know things like the correct image sizes to use and the length of effective messages. Of course, we're all familiar with, you know, the limitations on characters on Twitter. Behavior-wise, you're going to want to be communicating with your followers frequently as you count down to the release date. Hopefully, you've built up a good rapport with folks communicating about things other than trying to sell your books. Talk a little bit about the 80-20 rule. Unfortunately, in that 30 days, you're going to be really working on promoting your book and selling your book. But typically, the 20% in the 80-20 rule is what you do for self-promotion, and the 80% is more engagement, the kind of things that you do organically when you're just interacting with people online. This sort of flips a little bit. I would say it's probably the other way around in this 30-day launch window, and it's just by necessity. It needs to be. But you're going to want to do things like tease your readers, tease your followers with excerpts from your book to build some excitement. You can use contests to increase engagement. And we'll talk about contests a little bit more into the podcast. Ask your readers questions to increase interaction and notice by others. On Facebook in particular, you want to be sure that you're interacting with your followers through an author page, an author Facebook page. I would always recommend that you're not using your personal page. With the author page or with any sort of regular page like that, you get the ability to schedule posts, which will become increasingly important as you're so busy in this 30-day window. The other thing to do besides utilizing your own Facebook page is to make sure that you're reaching out and becoming a member on other Facebook pages that deal with the type of book that you've written. I mentioned mysteries before, romances. There's so many different Facebook groups out there. You want to join those groups so that you have access to give them information about your book launch. And that will be just another way to hopefully encourage some more sales. When you engage with other people too, you should be seeking out other authors or bloggers. And I've always found that the blogging community and the author community is very generous, and they will be reciprocal with promoting your book just because it's a nice environment. Everybody's very helpful to each other. It doesn't seem, you would think we'd be competitive, but it hasn't felt that way to me at all. So make sure to engage with other authors and bloggers. They'll be helpful to you. And like I said, use a scheduling function for your posts. Now, over on Twitter, I always have been told, and I utilize this somewhat, but probably not as much as I should have, is to create a hashtag for your book title and then use it consistently. So you're building a brand with that title. And it makes a lot of sense, and I wish I had actually used it more consistently. Become familiar with other hashtags. Hopefully you've done this in advance of your 30-day window. But there's things like hashtag fantasy fiction, hashtag romance. There's going to be a hashtag for just about every type of book you could have written. And then there's other types of hashtags that you can use when you're doing some of your promotional activities. Say you're giving out a little sample of your book, maybe a scene or a paragraph. You can use hashtag teaser Tuesday or sample Sunday. So there's all kinds of really fun things, and I actually really like Twitter because I think I just have a lot of fun with it. And you can schedule tweets in advance too. There's Hootsuite. I use TweetDeck, Do you use a scheduling service for?
Yeah, I also use TweetDeck, and one of the things that I looked at this today because we're having this conversation. This will of course air in a couple months' time, but as we're having this conversation, they've just switched it over to now everyone has access to 280 characters, and
that's right.
Yeah,
yay.
I saw today that it looks like TweetDeck has now set it up so you can do your 280 character limit through their service as well. So when you're scheduling tweets at this time, you have access to the full 280 characters. Whereas before, if you were one of the folks that were given the opportunity to have 280 characters before it went Twitter-wide, you were still limited with your scheduling to 140. So it's kind of nice that they freed that up a bit.
Oh, excellent. I'm very glad to hear that. Although, you know, I kind of got used to the 140 and I kind of liked it, but I guess the freedom to go just a little longer might not be a bad thing.
Well, and it's pretty early to say in, you know, this big change that Twitter has made, but I will say from, you know, just my own anecdotal evidence, I tend to, when I'm scrolling now, when I see folks who have gone to the full 280, my eyes just gravitate away. I don't read the whole thing unless a few words jump out. So it's perhaps worth mentioning as part of this podcast, you know, on a social media network like Twitter, still probably try to aim to keep it short, sweet, to the point. And I would also discourage folks from going too crazy with the hashtags. Like, it's really great to use the ones that are going to be most effective, but don't, you know, write 10 words or so for your actual post and then litter the rest of it with hashtags. Because in my opinion, right, that's a surefire way to get folks to not remain engaged with that content.
Yes. Use your hashtags judiciously, please. The other thing, too, if you are active on Instagram, is that, and I mean, these are just little things that you probably should know already if you've been on the site, is that you can space down, but you want to put like dashes or something and put your hashtags lower down. It's a way for people to sort and find you based on a hashtag. You know, you get categorized that way, but it doesn't necessarily need to be part of your message. And on Instagram in particular, they're often not in the message. The hashtags are all below it. So,
yeah, and while we're on the topic of hashtags, it's probably worth touching as well on how you mentioned hashtagging your title. You know, creating something that'll be unique to your book that you can include in those tweets so folks can search by that hashtag. One thing that it's important to do, for example, if you have a longer title is, of course, don't make your entire title the hashtag. That can be a little bit cumbersome. But if you're going to go with an acronym, for example, make sure you do a search for that acronym and see what else it's associated with and see how big of a thing it's, you know, being used for. Because you don't want your tweets to get lost in, you know, some professional organization's tweets that just happen to use a similar acronym to your book title. And you also don't want to have it end up in some weird, dumpy, trolly part of the internet where suddenly it looks like you're tweeting about that when you're really just trying to promote your book. So make sure you do your research on that front as well.
Yes, very smart. Please do your research. I'm trying to think. I was doing something one day with promotions, and I ended up making that mistake. And there was a company that was doing exactly what you said. They were using that particular hashtag for a project they were promoting. And anyway, I had to change what I was doing, obviously. So I was glad I figured it out.
Yeah, right. It's always reassuring once you've been able to correct for that, because there's those moments of panic where you're like, oh, what have I done? Am I stepping on people's toes? Are they going to come back and step on my whole foot as a result? You don't want to, you know.
Don't tip people off on the internet. Right, it's best to avoid it.
Right, definitely. I will say this. You mentioned earlier on when we were first talking about social media, the idea of getting your images ready to go for promotional purposes. And I don't know what service you might use, but I personally like to use Canva. And I don't know if you're familiar with that one at all, but I have found that to be pretty user-friendly. There's a lot of, you know, really good tools on there. You can pull in text and do interesting things. And also, of course, taking advantage of stock images by going to sites like pexels.com and pixabay.com. And then you can tweak those stock photos because they're free to use for commercial and personal use. And you can make some really nice professional looking promotional ads without having to go out and spend money on purchasing the rights to use certain photos or making everything in the soon to be retired Microsoft Paint, for example.
Yes, you're completely right. That is exactly what you need to do. Is Canva is pretty easy to use. I think that most people could work their way through it. There's a lot of people who I know are very well versed with the Adobe suite, and they can InDesign just about anything. But that's got a higher learning curve than Canva. And also, Canva is free, isn't it?
It sure is. There is an option to get some paid services. And I know part of that, what they were testing out at one point, was the ability to sort of create GIFs based on the images that you pull in. So you could, in theory, if you have the paid service or know someone who has it and is willing to help you out, you could create like a simple image that's associated with your book and turn it into like a 6-second like looping GIF, and then you could import that into Twitter. That would be really cool to do, but you know, we only have so much time to focus on all these things, so if that seems a little above your level, you're probably okay just sticking to the photos.
Right, and it makes sense too, you know, because we are concerned with copyright infringement as writers, that you are always double checking the images that you're using, whether they're on your social media sites or on your website or blog. When you're grabbing things for your blog posts, make sure you use some of those sites that have the copyright-free images. Just do your due diligence so that you're not ever going to get in trouble and having to, you know, pull pictures down or anything. And it's also really fun to kind of you know, get thematic with the way that you create the photos or images, graphics that you put into your blog. And Canva makes that's much more simple than it would be otherwise. So good advice. And when you're using your blog to promote your book launch, give your subscribers like the first look at your book cover, or maybe a teaser first chapter, or maybe other artwork or tidbits that you're willing to share. That's a good spot to do that. You can also reach out via other people's blogs. If you've made some friends with other bloggers, you may end up, you know, having some nice guest blog posts there. Otherwise, you can consider actually paying for a blog tour. If you're not sure what that is, it's when you visit different blogs during 1 or 2 weeks, and typically these are for reviews, guest posts, or interviews, and you pay for this privilege. It's usually not super expensive, maybe $100 to $150, and the blog tour organizer sets up the series of places you'll be visiting, you know, throughout the internet. And then you interact with those bloggers to make sure the content is ready. And overall, the blog tour coordinator, you know, assists with all of that. And you're scheduling this in advance. This is also something that would come before the 30-day window if you chose to pay for a blog tour. I do know authors who organize their own just because they know enough bloggers to make it happen, and they just make that part of their organization for their book launch more like 60 days out. So there are these services like blog tours that'll work for you. They also will work for you for gaining reviews and also, you know, helping you launch maybe, you know, the cover reveal. There's like full service groups, but we'll talk about that more when we're talking about reviews.
Perfect. Well, then let's transition not into reviews right away, but let's talk a little bit about contests or giveaways. Now, that's something you mentioned a little bit earlier, and of course, we're going to cover that more in depth now. So this is, of course, something you encourage writers to pursue in the days leading up to the launch, but what tips can you offer us where it comes to designing these contests and giveaways of our own? What should they look like, more or less?
Well, you know, if they're used wisely, giving things away can build a lot of excitement and attention around your book launch. In social media land, you can gain some more social media followers and subscribers to your newsletter. When you design a contest, though, you can decide what action needs to be taken to be entered into the contest, for the people to enter the contest. You can even have multiple actions that someone has to achieve in order to have multiple entries into a contest. So let me explain this further. I use Rafflecopter. Rafflecopter is a free contest manager, and they have a lot of suggested, you know, actions that you can incorporate into the portal for your contest. For instance, for a chance to win, you can ask people to follow you on Twitter. You can ask them to retweet a specific tweet. You would actually write the tweet, and then that would be embedded in this Rafflecopter module. You can ask them to subscribe to your newsletter or comment on a Facebook post. You can ask them to do all of them. You can even make one of them a necessity and the other one's optional. So if you're really trying to drive people to subscribe to your newsletter, that one has to be, you know, the one that they have to do. The other ones are just for extra entries. So it's really fun, and Rafflecopter organizes all of these people for you into a list. So it's a wonderful, simple platform. Of course, just like anything, there's the free version and there's the extended version that you would need to pay a subscription service for on Rafflecopter. But I have never found it necessary to move into the version that you have to pay for. It's definitely adequate for your needs, just the free one. And you get to decide what's most valuable to you. Are you looking for Twitter followers? Or do you prefer to get more people subscribing to your newsletter? You can even ask people, you know, comment below for an extra entry if you're promoting it over on Facebook. And then you also, you're in control here. You get to decide what you're willing to give away. Is it going to be ebooks? Is it going to be physical paperbacks or hardcovers? Are you going to have some cool swag that you give away? For instance, my book series is Celtic themed, and I found some really fun Irish items that I included in the swag package. You can decide if you, the frequency of the contest. Is it going to be all month? Is it going to be weekly, or is it going to be a combination? Now, I did a combination. I did weekly giveaways for ebooks and physical copies of the book, but then I did a month-long giveaway for this really awesome swag box. That's the thing that had all the Irish stuff in it. So it was a lot of fun. And I had a lot of engagement, and I did gain quite a few followers that way. You want to make sure you're following the contest rules of Twitter and Facebook. You can find those rules online easily just by Googling that, and they do change from time to time. The most recent contest I did, I know the rule was still in place that you could not ask people to follow or like your page on Facebook for an entry into a contest. That was not allowed. But you could ask them to, let's see, comment on a post. I think you were allowed to ask them to share a post, but that may have been changed. Do you remember? Have you done anything like that recently?
I actually have not, and that's something I wasn't aware of, so that's really good to know. I'd be curious to know if you have familiarity with those Twitter rules. That might be good to put out there for listeners as well.
They're much easier on you over on Twitter.
Okay, sure, yeah.
And you can ask people to retweet. Their rules were just not as invasive or constricting. So it was Facebook, and they do change it on Facebook. So it is feasible that what I'm saying right now has already been changed.
Yeah, certainly something to look into when we're doing that research prior to the 30 days leading up to the book launch, because of course we don't want to get a really cool contest idea together or a really neat giveaway put together and then find out that it would put us afoul of those Twitter or Facebook rules, and then they get rid of your post, and then it's a very sad day for you and your book.
It is. Don't do that. That would be sad. And then at the very end, if you, for instance, have not used Rafflecopter, where they actually allow you to, they will pick the winners, you know, randomly off the list. If you either used Rafflecopter and then added another component, say with Facebook comments or something where you need to pick from a larger list, you could use, or if you didn't use Rafflecopter at all, you could use the random results generators online. The one I like is just randomresults.com. You can import like an Excel list, and then it'll choose, you know, however many people you want in, you know, like if you have five winners, it'll choose them for you. So there's no, you know, oddity there where you're feeling like you're not giving people, you know, their proper chances.
Yeah, that's very good. I had heard of Rafflecopter, but I didn't realize how useful it could be. So that sounds like something that would really be worth checking out once, you know, we get to that stage with our books. So far, we've talked a lot about how to reach readers from a distance, or potential readers, that is. What tips do you have for advertising our book launch to people in person? What kind of direct marketing opportunities do you see? And do you have any suggestions for strategies on that front?
Well, here again, it's likely best to have made this list in advance of the 30-day window so you can hit the ground running. But you're going to want a list of your area bookstores, the managers, librarians, teachers or school librarians, if you've written something that's for school age readers, maybe even book club organizers, if you know of book clubs in your area. You want to be contacting them, of course, for book purchases, but also to set up events. It's a great way to make yourself known in a community as an author and as a resource for discussions on writing or your book's topic or anything else that you've learned from your experience in the publishing world. So when you make the list of locations, you're going to want to consider how far you're willing to drive. So you can kind of do your radius from, you know, where you live and maybe make that your zone. And, you know, just it really depends. At this point, you know, a lot of authors are never sure whether they should charge for a visit or not. In this promotional period, I typically do not charge unless it's maybe a very complex workshop or something that you're being asked to do because you have maybe teaching experience in writing or something like that. Otherwise, at this point, you're just hoping to get the promotional edge And get the word out about your book, and then also have the opportunity to sell books to the attendees or to the store. And when you're reaching out with your information, you need to decide which of these places, when you're, you know, giving them your packet of information, are going to be in-person visits or phone calls or emails. Now, the in-person approach works really well with bookstores and public libraries, but it doesn't work so well for schools because, of course, there's all the rules on the visitors and, you know, checking in and that sort of thing. So you're going to probably want to call or email if you're working in the school setting. And what you're going to be giving them is the same thing that's in your media packet for when we talk about traditional media, except you're going to have an additional item, which is going to be the list of your events or the type of events or visits that you're offering. So even if you don't end up scheduling an event with these folks, you're giving them enough information about your book that hopefully it will lead to more sales because they'll have the ability to order it.
Yeah, that sounds like a really great strategy and also a good way to sort of continue to develop your brand as an author in the local writing community, because I've found, at least, you know, in my experience so far, the folks that you really do connect best with are the ones that are also in your area, because there's so much else in common. And when you make those connections face to face, when you make it over a handshake, they're the kind of contacts that, you know, endure longer over time, as opposed to the folks that you might interact with online once in a while, for example.
Yeah, it's completely true. And it's so much more fun, too. I mean, I know that everybody thinks that writers are, you know, introverts or a reclusive group. But, you know, really, we do like to get out. You know, it's kind of a solitary endeavor most of the time. It's nice to get out and talk with other like-minded people.
Yeah, it certainly is, especially when it's something, you know, when we're given the opportunity to talk about our book and the research that perhaps went into it. That's always an exciting thing to share as well, because there's so much that goes on behind the scenes while writing a book that most readers might not be familiar with. And unless you're a writer yourself, you might not have a lot of background in.
Right. And those are my most favorite visits, when I get to talk about, like, say, all the Celtic research I've done or the archaeological research. I don't know. I just get really excited about the things I've learned. So those are good days.
Yeah, certainly. Well, we've talked about a lot of different topics so far, but one we haven't hit on yet is reviews and trying to get positive book reviews prior to the book actually being released, as, of course, these normally help readers decide which books to buy and which books to leave on the shelf. So what, in your opinion, can we do to get favorable reviews for our book in advance of the book actually launching? And are there other ways to boost our book's accolades prior to launch?
Yes, to all of that. In advance of your book release, you can offer an advanced reader copy in digital format to your followers or subscribers in exchange for a review. Some people worry that this is going to hurt their sales with their best fans, but I think it is balanced out by the value of those early reviews boosting sales with people you don't know. Because that's exactly what happens. You know, we all do this. We go on Amazon and we're looking for something, and, you know, it may be in a certain topic, but if a book has, say, 100 reviews and they're good, and a book has, you know, 30 reviews and they're kind of like mediocre, or even if there's 30 good reviews, you're probably going to go with the one that's got more reviews. It's just the way we operate. So, of course, not all the people that you're asking to review who request that advanced reader copy are going to write a review. It's just the way it works. So, yes, it is a risk that you are potentially hurting your initial sales with your best group of readers, but I do think that it is worth the effort to do so. And if you've done a good job of building up a subscriber list to your blog or newsletter, I would say those are the folks that you offer this to first, rather than your Facebook fans or your Twitter followers. And this also makes them feel pretty darn special that they're part of your inner circle. This is also the first spot where I'd spend money if you have money in your launch budget. Just like blog tours, there are these services that provide the outreach to the participating bloggers and reviewers to review in advance of the publication date. The fees vary based on the group, but they're not extraordinary. You can spend a couple $100s to get reviews, and it's just, like you say, it's just worth it. I've participated in reviews via a system or a service called NetGalley. Now, NetGalley, a lot of publishers subscribe to NetGalley. It's very expensive for independently published authors because the subscriber fees aren't substantially different for a publisher who has many titles versus an indie pubbed person author who only has one or two, you know, in a year. It's kind of fun, though, if you're a reader to become one of their readers, because you get a lot of books for free. So on the opposite side of things here, it's kind of a nice opportunity. One of my friends recently had really good success with a group called Give Me Books event bloggers. And they have a 3,000 person list of potential reviewers. And for a couple hundred dollars, they'll put your book out there in advance, and people choose to download your book, and you know, get sent to them, you know, via this group. So you also aren't doing that work from your desk at home, and then they are given a timeline about when that review has to be posted. So it's a regimented system, and you're agreeing to do that when you sign on. And it's very clear what the expectations are. So then you know, there's groups always coming up and changing, and I would always just recommend to do a Google search and look for some, you know, some reviews of the reviewers and the feedback. Usually you can find that online pretty easily. And then talk to other authors too at events to find out who they've used. You will get a good read very quickly, you know, if there's somebody you've got to avoid. Now, this effort is separate from asking for editorial reviews. What I'm talking about there are the professional review services that you have to submit your book to well in advance often. Publishers Weekly, School Library Journal, Midwest Book Review, Forward Book Reviews is another one. Kirkus is the biggie. Now, Kirkus typically will not review for free an independently published book. Actually, I think that is their policy. It has to be traditionally published. However, there are paid reviews on a lot of these sites. Some of the paid services, you have to decide, you know, is it worth it to spend this money? A Kirkus review is very pricey. I want to say, is it approaching $400 or slightly over $400 now? And of course, you have no idea if it's going to be a positive review or not. So it might not even be usable to you in your promotional activities. So again, this big window pops up. So for these professional reviews, you're going to have to look at this well in advance. The editorial review sites sometimes require that they receive an advanced reader copy even 3 months before. So sometimes that's not possible in the independent publishing world. And sometimes if you're really dying for one of these reviews to, you know, boost your sales, then you need to have a much longer timeline for when that advanced reader copy is ready. Before your launch date. Let's see. Oh, you asked about contests, didn't you?
Oh yeah, let's talk about contests then also.
Okay, so when I think about like the pre-publication contests, there's many lists available. Publishers Weekly has good lists, Writer's Digest does, and there's a website called New Pages, and they have really good lists of contests to enter. Now, these don't have to be, you don't have to enter the contest with the book length work necessarily that you are going to be launching here. If you're looking to add to your resume and your accolades, you know, to just give your biography more weight, you can certainly enter these contests with short story entries or other things like that. Then you add that to your bio. So it'd be something like, you know, Jane Smith, who has been an award winner in the Midwest Reviews short story contest, you know, her debut novel comes out, you know, yada, yada, yada. So something like that. So it can give you a little bit more help with getting media attention. Now, my debut novel, way before it was published, actually 4 years before it was published, was recognized as a finalist in a New York-based young adult novel discovery contest. So that was, beside being a great boost to my confidence, it gave me a nice shiny seal to put on the cover of that book at the time that it was published. So there's, you know, it's useful, and a lot of these contests are very, very low entry fees. Some of them are actually free. So it's just, you know, it's probably worth it to research those a little bit if you've got the time. But of course, that again is something that you would be working on, you know, throughout the year leading up to your publication. It would be well in advance of your launch.
Yes, we've talked about a number of things that we want to try and get the ball rolling with prior to those 30 days. We've talked about things that we can attack really aggressively in the final 30 days leading up to the book launch. So let's focus in on those final 30 days. How much time would you say that you expect someone to spend per day on these promotional projects?
I'm looking back on all the things I've just, you know, said in the last how many minutes, and I'm expecting a lot out of an author, aren't I?
Yeah, it's a lot to pursue. But like you said, it's kind of an arbitrary window, but 30 days is, of course, regardless of how early you start before that, those final 30 days are going to be an intense 30 days if you really want to hit the ground running.
They are. Now, if you've done your homework, like, you know, I've told you you've had to do, and you have all those things in place, when you hit that 30-day point, you've got your social media in place, you've researched your list, you have your media list, your potential event location list, you have the list of reviewers you're going to contact, you've got other contest lists ready to go. You can manage this, and I did this in an average of 2 hours a day. I swear that's all it was. On the weekends, because I had a day job, so on the weekends I might spend a little bit more time scheduling the posts, and making sure I was ready. That way then every single weeknight I wasn't doing another 2 hours of work. So to lighten my load during the week, I would work harder on the weekend days. But to be honest, that's all it turned out to be, was an average of 2 hours a day. And it was manageable. Now, I'm a calendar kind of person, so I mapped everything out, the contest and when the posts would post for the contest, when the content posts would go out on social media, like when I wanted to do a little teaser Tuesday post with part of, you know, a chapter to drive interest in the book. So I mapped it all out at the beginning of that 30 days. Without that level of organization, though, I think it would be longer because it would be hard to keep track. You have to actually really get down to business with a calendar at the beginning. And then you should be able to I wouldn't say breeze through it. It's hard work, but you'll be able to get through it without, you know, basically wanting to run and hide and never write another book in your life.
And that's not what we want to be left with at the end. It's got to be, you know, it's an exciting time.
This should be an exciting time. It truly is. It will work. And I will offer to anyone that you can certainly contact me if you have questions about any of this. And I'm happy to assist. I've done it a number of times, and I have lived to tell the tale.
You're still here and you're still writing books, so it can't be that bad, right?
I am. I haven't run for the hills.
Well, that's all very good. So before we draw the interview to a close, do you have any last bits of advice you'd like to pass along to listeners who might be gearing up for a book launch of their own?
Well, I would say take it piece by piece and don't let the overall task scare you. All of these component parts are doable. You just have to take them one at a time.
I think that sounds like a very effective strategy. It's the same kind of thing that I think we try to implement when we're writing, hopefully, too. You know, it's word by word, scene by scene, chapter by chapter, and soon enough you'll find yourself with a novel, and then you get to take the same approach when you're promoting the thing. So I think that's very good advice to take with us as we go out into the world and start working on promoting our book. So thank you, Valerie, very much for joining me on this episode. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Thank you so much.
And so concludes my RightsCast interview of Valerie Beal, public relations professional and author of the award-winning Circle of Nine series. I know all of this marketing and PR work seems like a lot to keep track of, but as was mentioned near the end of the episode, if you give yourself plenty of time to plan ahead and create your timelines in advance, you can make the process that much more effective and enjoyable, all the while minimizing your stress level. It is possible, I promise. You love your book, now get out there and tell the rest of the world why they should too. A big thank you to listeners for tuning in, and to Valerie, of course, for coming back on the show. As always, I'd like to extend Kristen Oakley a word of gratitude as well for her patronage of $3 per episode over at patreon.com/rightscast. As a patron at the Wise Mentor level, Kristen earns these shoutouts in every episode on top of all the great patron rewards available to guests who pledge their support at $1 or $2 per show as well. So thank you, Kristen, for your support. Next up on the RightsCast, we'll be branching out into a new kind of episode entirely, a Biblio Breakdown. What's a Biblio Breakdown, you ask? Well, a Biblio Breakdown examines a specific book with the goal of appreciating and understanding it from the perspective of a writer. The goal is to think deliberately about how the work in question can help us improve our own writing by taking a look at how published authors of various backgrounds approach things like inciting incidents, dramatic irony, inner character relationships as metaphor, and how they contribute to theme, and more. If you're interested in learning more about Biblio Breakdowns, before this episode featuring Khaled Hosseini's A Thousand Splendid Suns debuts on February 16th, you can visit rrcampbellwrites.com/bibliobreakdown. That's rrcampbellwrites.com/BIBLIO breakdown. And in the meantime, you can always sign up for our newsletter over at rrcampbellwrites.com/newsletter or follow me or the show on Twitter at @IamRRCampbell and @WritesCast. That's all for now, but be sure to check back in 2 weeks' time for that first ever podcastified version of a Biblio Breakdown. Thanks as always for tuning in. Write on and write well.